and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to Let's Talk About Luke's Favorite Defensive Coordinator Edition as we get to preview your Minnesota Golden Gopher defense, Luke.
You know, we both have had the opportunity to eat crow on defensive takes on this podcast. Yours being enshrining Hank Ekpe and Canton, and mine being I didn't think that Joe Rossi could sustain it, and here we are. So this is the beauty of putting out takes and having to be completely wrong. But yeah, I'm here for it. I love the flack that people give me online and the random people that I meet. And like, hey, you do that podcast, right? And I was like, yeah. They go, you're the one that thinks Joe Rossi sucks. And I'm like, I don't think he sucks. I just didn't think that it was gonna be as good as it's been. And dang, it was good, man.
I don't know if I've told you this. What if I told you that I've told Joe Rossi that my co-host for the podcast doesn't think he's very good?
You
know what his response was?
What? I don't care.
So, having a conversation with him, and he's like, yeah, you know, there's some people who just don't like it. He goes, oh, yeah, who? I go, well, for example, my co-host was incredibly skeptical of you, Joe. He goes, to be fair, I'm incredibly skeptical of me. So I think he's right. Okay. So if anything, you should feel vindicated, Luke, that Rossi, the mafia man that he is.
Yeah.
He's always trying to change his best, and he just wants you to know that he's not perfect, even though maybe you've swung out a little too far back the other way.
Do you remember that photo initially that came out, like when he was hired, where he just had this, like,
he just looks like a mobster?
Yeah, just like deadpan mobster look. There were people at the signing day social, shout out Goal Line Club, awesome event, that were literally there just trying to get him to like make that impression, and he was there.
I was there,
for
standing
so
with
I.
you at that Goal Line Club event,
right?
Where I
God
think,
that was good.
Friend of the podcast, Big Hat Guy.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys trying to get him. I think he got that photo, and when Big Hat Guy eventually listens to this, if he could tweet me a photo. If he still has it, I will gladly retweet that from the Gopher Radio podcast. But I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, between he or Berkland or someone's got to have it, right? So if anybody has it, please tweet it. That was such an amazing, amazing interaction to watch because Rossi was just there for it. It was just great.
So that's where tonight will be defense.
Yes.
I have seen a couple of Gopher football practices. Maybe you've been at one. Maybe you're at the one on Saturday. If you're listening to this on Thursday and you don't have any Thursday night plans, I'd highly recommend if you can convince your significant other, head down to Huntington Bank Stadium. It's an 8 p.m. or 7:45 or 8 p.m. practice, open to the public. And same thing goes for next Monday. There is another open practice that I'll be at those two. I've already been at two. As we'll get into next week when we get Daniel House on the podcast, we'll get into a lot more of what he and I think of watching four practices and where we think things are at. So I don't want to bore people. And by bore, I'm sure people are clamoring for that. And if you are, oh, by the way, I got all the stuff up on Gopher Illustrated. Plus Dan Owen took 70 beautiful photos so you can see what everybody looks like. I've got quotes from Fleck and Mo and whoever else you want to read from, position by position notes. And it's, oh, by the way, just $1 to get in the door. But
I can't believe that inflation hasn't hit that yet. So it's a dollar still. It's not like a dollar in like 8.5 cents.
Well, that's here's my question is we've seen the rumblings this week about the Big Ten media deal. And maybe by the time you listen to this, they've announced more details or whatnot, but from what I've seen, Luke, there's no longer going to be after 2023. I think it's the last year of the current Big Ten media rights deal. The Big Ten's going to be off ESPN for the first time in my lifetime. Which here's my question to you, Luke, as someone posed to me: do you care? Because I don't. Because no. I'm never watching ESPN anymore. Like when I was growing up. Again, I'll date myself. I just turned 30. like in the early 2000s, I couldn't wait to turn on SportsCenter because it was actually highlights, actually Stuart Scott or whoever it may have been. Mm-hmm. Now ESPN is just a bunch of media personalities is how I'll describe them, just screaming nonsense. And it's no longer about sports. And now it's going to be CBS, Fox, it sounds like NBC, among others. But do you care that the Big Ten is no longer going to be on ESPN?
Not particularly. I mean, I think you and I still fall into that generally young club, right? But we're
millennials.
Yeah, I mean, we're generally considered young. But like, I have lunch with like the interns that we hire. Do you know how many of them watch ESPN and or have a cable subscription? Like none. Of them. And it doesn't mean that they don't like sports. A lot of them, what they do is they either illegally stream it, they have a streaming service, or they watch the games that happen to be on network broadcast. Now, I don't know that all these games are going to be on the network broadcast, but I think there's actually an opportunity to grow your audience not on ESPN. Like, by the fact that if the games are going to be on Fox, CBS, and NBC, probably better. There's probably going to be a streaming thing as well. And if there's a streaming thing, you hope that it hits one of the bigger ones or they're able to grow, whether that's Peacock or Apple TV or Paramount. By the way, Synergy, man,
well, that's where I was going to, because, oh, by the way, if you haven't heard, if you're a full paying member, you know, AKA your offer promotion type of deal on GI, you get Paramount Plus for free. So for the 2000 plus Gopher Illustrated members that we have, if you're listening to this and for the first time, you're somehow just hearing that you're like, oh, I paid $8-$9 a month, or you should just be an annual member. And so you can pay $7 a month or whatever. And you're like, oh, I get Paramount Plus. So that means I can watch whatever you want to watch on Paramount Plus, and you get it for free with your 247 subscription.
Yeah.
But that's where I was going, Lucas. How are you going to feel about, instead of Aggie Vision?
Yeah.
What if, hypothetically, for the 2024 non-conference, when Minnesota plays Rhode Island, and it's not going to be on CBS or Fox or NBC, how would you feel about you having to watch the game on Paramount Plus potentially?
Well, the fact that I have Paramount Plus, I feel really good about that because I don't have to literally go and download, some sort of like FUBU TV subscription so that I can, the free trial so that I can watch one game. I think that was the Colorado game last year. I don't hate that. I do think that we'll run into some hiccups and some roadblocks, but I'd rather pay a subscription for a month for a streaming service to watch one game than I would to have to get a cable package tier where it's way harder to cancel. It's, for the most part, canceling streaming services is pretty straightforward.
Well, that's where that's going to be what I think kind of the beauty of what the new life will be is you can just buy an analog TV thing that you put up right next to the window. Essentially digital bunny ears for those of you who don't know what we're talking about. You'll have the Fox game at noon or 11 a.m. here central. You'll have, sounds like, the CBS game 2-3 o'clock, and then NBC will be taking the thing home. And so my question just becomes, when it's Northwestern versus Illinois in November, what are they playing on? Is it Amazon? Is it Apple TV? Is it Peacock? Is it Paramount Plus? I have no idea, but the top three games for the Big Ten will still be covered, obviously. But did you also see the comments today that Notre Dame's athletic director made?
You mean the part where he heaped praise on Kevin Warren and the Big Ten and how they structured? Yeah, I saw that.
Well, here's the tweet I was thinking about. It's from Matt Fortuna. He says, Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame athletic director, says on the school's live chat about the Big Ten's new TV deal, it's perfect for Notre Dame. We need NBC to have more college football to effectively promote our games and talk more about our games to have NBC be seen in that light. So that was great for us. Boy, it's not really helping to throw any water on the Notre Dame to the Big Ten fire, but we'll see if that ends up happening between now and then. But again, for our generation, Luke, which is the king of the cord cutters, that's kind of the beauty of this, in my eyes anyway, is I don't have to figure out a way to get ESPN anymore.
Yeah.
I can just put up the digital bunny ears. And again, if it is Paramount Plus or if it's Amazon, I mean, I don't know very many people in 2022 that don't have an Amazon Prime subscription, or at least access to one. So if the game streamed on Amazon or something, that's not going to bother me at all. Or even, again, even Peacock, where my lovely fiance loves to watch trashy television on. Like, I already have those, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, but I am excited about the possibility of not having to figure out how I'm going to be watching ESPN. But we'll see what ends up happening here.
All right, Ryan, I know that we're going to talk more about fall camp observations when we have Daniel House on next week. But anything you want to touch on real quickly? I know it's all covered on Gopher Illustrated, but anything you want to, at a high level, touch on quickly?
I would just say that injury-wise, I think they're in a pretty good position so far through the first week and a half, 2 weeks of camp. Daniel Jackson, who was competing with Michael Brown Stevens to be wide receiver 3 in this offense, looks like he's got a high ankle sprain on his left foot. I don't know that I anticipate him practicing much or necessarily even playing before New Mexico State. We'll see how that thing heals. And then Logan Richter's also got, looks like, an ankle sprain on his left foot. So if the only thing we're talking about so far is two rotational players dealing with some sprained ankles, I think they're in a pretty good spot compared to some of the other Minnesota sports injuries of yesteryear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Jackson could be a loss because there's not a lot of wide receiver depth there. But yeah, I can hear you in saying that, like, you know, football is a game of injuries. And the fact you only have two so far through spring practice, especially what we know from years past, I mean, that's fairly positive. Let's hope they can escape yet again. I'll knock on wood. Just to be sure.
And again, we'll touch on a bunch of that next week, but I can't believe that you're not yearning to be able to talk about your guy, Joe Rossi.
Yeah. Okay. Defensively, let's get into this. Let's maybe just real quickly summarize what this defense did last year. Expectations, at least from me in this side of Roseville, were not particularly high for this defense. And then this defensive line last year that was not, I don't think anybody was like real high on, that was kind of a question mark, ended up being arguably like the star of this defense, right? And the back end wasn't completely proven, but they proved to be above average and borderline like really good. The big jumps that Howden and Newbin made, and then adding Wally was huge as well with Coney Durr. But okay, so ultimately, this defense was a top 20. I think they're a top 20 defense in the end, Ryan. And they do lose a lot, but they also bring back a lot. So there's reasons for optimism. There's still some areas probably for concern that we should go over. But again, this defense, probably now we've got two samples that are like, man, this is pretty good defense. We have reason to probably be somewhat optimistic, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, 'tis the time of year, to be honest, where you would have asked me 2 weeks ago before I watched two practices, I would have been more pessimistic about, say, the defensive line than I would be now after seeing it for two practices, where I would say, with all that they have to replace there, with no more Micah Dutredway, Niles Pinckney, your guy, Val Martin, Boye Mafe, Sezi Otemihu. I mean, we're talking about a lot of guys who played a lot of football outside of Martin. And that's where I didn't really know what to expect. And now that I've seen a couple of practices, I'm just sitting here like, I really don't think that there's going to be that much of a drop-off from last season to this season. And, you know, I've talked about it on Gopher Illustrated, where I've had some questions about Brick Haley, Minnesota's new defensive line coach, taking over for Chad Wilt. You know, those question marks have certainly been more so on the recruiting side, with maybe the lack of targets that he's brought in, or kind of some misses that they've had in the defensive line in their 23 class. But that's where I said, I mean, maybe this thing just all makes it worthwhile when you watch a Brick Haley defensive line. And I would tell you, from watching two practices and watching a Brick Haley defensive line, they are playing as physical as I've seen a Minnesota defensive line in my 12 years now on the beat. And I don't mean to make presumptuous statements or outlandish statements, it's these guys are playing incredibly, incredibly physical, which if there's one place, Luke, that you want to be very, very physical, where do you think that is?
That'd be the defensive line, Mr. Burns.
That'd be in the trenches. Yeah, absolutely. So there's obviously inexperience there with so many guys playing a lot of snaps that are now either in the NFL or just off the roster. But we can start to go through some of the names, but it's just I have been impressed with, because we're going to be talking about a lot of guys who are second, third, fourth, in the case of Thomas Rush, fifth year. But it's so funny to kind of, and I wrote about this yesterday after watching practice, the days of, and you know, the terrible analogy I made is the days of the Luke Rasmussens and the Ben Lowers on the offensive line are over, where the Jerry Kill offensive tackles who are 225 pounds soaking wet. And then I'm watching Tony Nelson, Ashton Beers, and Cade McConnell, who are all just grown effing men compared to what some of the offensive linemen I've seen come in as true freshmen. Even looking at a guy like Anthony Smith, I can assure you there was no Jerry Kill defensive line recruit outside of maybe Rashid Hagman who came in as a true freshman and looked the way he did. Mm-hmm. And I would be absolutely gobsmacked if we saw Anthony Smith, which is a great thing, because if there's anything I'm going to label this D-line, I think it's that they have depth, Luke. They have depth.
So that's actually one of the questions I wanted to touch on, because one of the strengths last year was like the fact – well, it was the fact that they were able to rotate up to eight guys, right? Sometimes even 9 or 10. And that was a way that they're able to keep bodies fresh. And this is like, this is a strategy that they've committed to even prior to when they probably had enough depth like they had last year. And you just don't see the drop off. And my question, I think when we talked even in the winter was, yeah, there's some hesitation whether or not they're going to actually have the depth to be able to do that again this year. But what are you seeing now, Ryan? Do you think that depth is there so they can continue home with that strategy of, you know, rotating consistently and keeping guys fresh?
I do. And that's where, I mean, the beautiful thing is you just look at defensive end, if you want to start there, and specifically rush end. I think you'll see Thomas Rush. As someone that I wrote about it, I think it was either last week or the week before, you know, breakout candidates defensively. And I felt so stupid putting Thomas Rush on the list. But the more I continue to interact with Gopher fans, I just think that people are still stuck in 2019 or excuse me, 2020, where Thomas Rush got thrown to the wolves that season in his first season at Rush End, where he switches over from linebacker, doesn't get any time in the offseason because of COVID, misses two of the 3 weeks of fall camp because he had COVID, and then he's got to be thrown out there and he doesn't have any idea what he's doing. He's running ahead with his chicken cutoff. And you're watching Taulia Tagovailoa just run circles around him as Minnesota loses that atrocious game out there in Maryland. Last season, he was pretty good, folks. He was better than Boye Mafe against the run. That's not sexy to say. That's not going to get you a top 100 draft pick. But he is someone that is still coming along as a pass rusher. I mean, I think he was fourth in pressures, second in sacks, second in tackles for loss last year. This isn't a guy that's a bad player. Mm-hmm. I feel like at least the recent interactions I've had, people just think Thomas Rush is a scrub. And now I don't know if maybe that's my millennial lingo kind of catching up with me here, but Thomas Rush is a good player,
well,
folks.
I think too. I mean, I think anytime guys make a transition from like where they were recruited, if memory serves, he was like a running back turned linebacker, then turned defensive lineman, right? And that meandering process and evolution of a player is not quick. They're not immediate impact. And so I think often players like that are discounted as, you know, they're not the splashy four star that comes in and, you know, contributes year one or year two. And now he's been effective, you know, in year four, and he's got year five here. You're like, give him a break, guys. He's going to be a good football player.
Yeah. And again, he's 245. He is very physical. I mean, he's given Ariante Urseri all he can handle at left tackle, which I think is great for both players. Number one, because I think Ariante Urseri, whenever he does leave the U, is going to be the highest drafted offensive tackle that we've seen maybe in my lifetime. Now, I don't think that's this year. I will state that again, and we can talk with House about it next week. But Ariante going against Thomas Rush is getting better. And Thomas Rush is getting better for going against Ariante Arisri. But the beautiful part, I think, that's maybe undersold about this defensive line, Luke, I think is the competition, where we have seen maybe previously where some guys maybe didn't practice as hard because they knew that they had their spot and there was no one behind them.
Sure.
Well, Thomas Rush is getting pushed by guys like Danny Strigow and Austin Booker. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would say that Thomas Rush is the most complete of the rush ends, where he can be good against the run. And I still think he's got upside against the pass. And that's where you get to Strigow. I think he is a better run defender than Austin Booker, but Austin Booker certainly has the physical tools and the physical upside to be a much better pass rusher than all three of them if it clicks.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, is that's the beauty of these three rush ends, is Thomas Rush, you can play against the run of the pass. Danny Strigow, you can put out there on rundowns. And then, so say Thomas Rush goes down with an injury, God forbid. Well, I'd put Danny Strigow out there on rundowns, and I'd throw Austin Booker out there on pass downs. I still think there is a plausible way that all three of them play 100 or more snaps this year. And that's if Thomas Rush even stays healthy, because I don't want Thomas Rush out there for 500 snaps. That's not good for anybody. You need to get Danny Strigow more experience. You need to get Austin Booker more experience before Thomas Rush is off to the NFL. And that's where I think between the three of them, that's the kind of exciting part about it, is you let in with, we saw them rotate guys last year. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see them rotate in probably three defensive ends at that rush end spot. And to be fair, I think all three are deserving of it. It's not, you're not throwing a body out there to be an obligatory rotational sub.
I think, though, the point that you're making, that you're kind of glossing over a little bit, is not only do they have depth, but they also have situational depth, right? Which you kind of need, right, in this conference. Like in this conference, you need it because you have the variety of styles, whether that's Wisconsin or Maryland, right? You need it. You need a more, probably a little bit more versatile player against Maryland, but you need Wisconsin, Iowa, you know, some of those run heavy teams. You need the Danny Strigows of the world to play more downs in those kinds of games.
Right. And so that's where against the Purdue's, maybe Austin Booker's on the field more rotating him with Thomas Rush. Against the Northwesterns and the Wisconsins and the Iowas, maybe Danny Strigow's rotating more in. And that's where maybe a guy I shouldn't say forgot about, I guess didn't give enough credit to in this race, was probably Danny Strigow, where you look at Austin Booker and he's 6'6", he's long, like, he's incredibly athletic, and yeah, you see the physical, you know, tantalizing upside there. You do. And he's in his second year, and I still think he's probably a year or maybe even two away from really seeing how good he could potentially be. And that's where, from talking with some people around the program, I think the spring was really good for Austin Booker, where maybe he needed to be, I don't know, humbled is the right word or not, but showed that he's got a ways to go yet. They're obviously still very excited about him, but he's still got a ways to go yet. Or just, and even with Danny Strigow, and he's someone that has been in the program a couple of years now. I believe he's in his third year, and he's gotten physically stronger. People will remember he was a state champion wrestler. He comes from a strong wrestling family. And I really like defensive linemen that are wrestling background, because they tend to know all about leverage. They tend to know how to use their hands really well. But that's the beauty, Luke, is you have situational depth behind them, and it's guys that I think are capable of playing. So it's exciting at rush end. And then on the other side for that Asezi spot, Jalen Logan Redding has maybe been the most surprising defensive lineman to me at camp, where I kind of just pegged him as someone that he's good against the run. That's about what you get. Well, since he's been working with Brick Haley, I mean, he has been giving whoever the right tackle is, or even Ariante Arisri at times fits. He has been physical, and he has been in the backfield. I mean, when we were just there on Tuesday, 97 was in the backfield quite a bit, and Brick Haley was very excited about him. Mm-hmm. And now the funny part is, Luke, you'll remember, when Jalen Logan Redding flipped to Minnesota from Missouri, do you know why he flipped?
Did Brick Haley leave?
He was committed to Brick Haley at the University of Missouri. Brick Haley got fired. He reopened his recruitment, comes to Minnesota, and because life is just 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, or in this instance, Brick Haley.
Yeah.
He gets to now work with Brick Haley, and it turns out Brick Haley's kind of unlocking Jalen Logan Redding a little bit. Here's now, I'm not saying this is going to be my next Hank Epke.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it is I still think Jalen Logan Redding is stronger against the run than he is as a pass rusher. But you have Ja Joyner there, who is the more of the pass rushing type. So you have different strengths, and you have, again, in certain situations, and that's the beautiful part, Luke, is it's on against those running teams. You have Jalen Logan Redding and the Danny Strigaus and the Thomas Rushes against on those passing downs to try and generate pressure. You put Rush and Booker and Ja Joyner, maybe even Lorenzo Sergers out there, the Vanderbilt transfer they took. Again, I think they have three viable names at both end spots right now.
Do you think one of the reasons we're overlooking, or that you maybe overlooked a Fleming or even a Ja Joyner was, you know, last year midseason prior to, I can't think of his name at the moment, that get transferred to Iowa State. Like, he looked like he was going to be the stud at that, Assezi's defensive end spot. God, what is his name? That's driving me nuts.
I'm so confused about where you are. No.
The defensive lineman, he flashed a couple times. He played defensive line.
MJ Anderson,
yes. Him.
Who's now at Iowa State.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, like I think I had him penciled in as like, well, this guy's going to play a ton next year at this position because it says he's going to be gone.
I'd still argue that if he would have stuck it out, he should have been playing a lot. But I think the nice thing is, again, it's the competition. It's Jalen Logan Redding knowing that if he wants to play, he better freaking bring it every snap or else Ja Joyner's going to get in there. If Ja Joyner wants to get in there, he's got to beat out Lorenzo Sergers, and he's got to beat out Jalen Logan Redding. And I think, again, especially when we're talking about teenagers or, you know, guys in their early 20s, it's all about competition and somebody actually pushing you to kind of be your best. And again, in this instance, I think it's working well on Minnesota's defensive line.
All right, cool. Let's talk a little bit about defensive tackle. I obviously, again, have to replace a lot here and probably even more than defensive end, right?
Yeah, no more, like I said, no more Niles Pinckney, no more Mikeadue Treadway.
My guy, Val Martin.
Your guy, Val Martin. Go for Hole's own, Val Martin.
Wait, does he work there now?
No, that's just taking a shot across the bow.
Oh, okay.
But it's interesting at the defensive tackle position. Why I say that it is, I didn't really know what position Trill Carter was going to be. You saw him play nose guard last year. You saw him play three technique. From what my own two eyes tell me, he's starting to find a home at the three technique position, which I get it. I think he's Minnesota's most disruptive defensive lineman. And if you're going to be the disruptive one, you probably want him at the three technique where he gets more one-on-one opportunities than the nose guard who's going to be eating up double teams all game. And so that's where I'm not incredibly worried about this Logan Richter injury. I also like to think I know what Logan Richter is. It's a space-eating 340-pound nose guard. I mean, there's value in that, and that's okay if he's just a run-plugging, big, gigantic body. I mean, I would say the same thing for the Houston Baptist transfer, Kyler Baugh, who isn't 6'4", 340. I mean, I bet you he's probably 6 foot, 6'1". He's not really a lot taller than Trill, but Kyler Baugh is he's one of the strongest guys on the team. You talk to some of the people around the strength staff. When they brought him in, they really, again, you kind of know where they're at, you know, height, weight, strength-wise, and that's where Kyler Baugh is one of the strongest guys in the team, and that's why they like him there at that one technique. You still have a guy like Jacob Schuster in his second year. Again, not the biggest guy in the world, but somebody really good with his hands. They've been using the Clemson transfer, Darnell Jeffries, at that one technique. So, again, you at that one technique spot, you have four guys trying to compete for two spots. You have Logan Richter, Kyler Baugh, Jacob Schuster, Darnell Jeffries. You have guys as old as a second year and Jacob Schuster. You have guys in their fourth and fifth year like Darnell Jeffries and Kyler Baugh. And then you got a guy like Logan Richter in his fourth year. So, again, a bunch of guys competing at that one technique spot. But, again, it's the three techniques that is, I guess, the sexy position of the defensive tackles. That's where Trill Carter is. That's where I think he's going to play a bulk of his snaps. But that's where you have the tantalizing upside of Devin Eastern. Because when you go watch a practice, I would be hard-pressed to believe if you watch the defensive line, if you don't watch number 91 or he doesn't stick out to you, we're watching very different defensive lines.
Is he the most impressive physically?
Since Rashid Hageman.
Well, I was gonna say, like, I remember walking into practices in years past, and like the first time I saw Kamal Martin, I was like, okay, that guy's a football player. And then, I mean, who at Eastern? I haven't seen him outside of, you know, games. I'm curious to see, get to one of these practices and see if I get that same like whoa factor.
I would imagine you will, and that's where the scary thing the thing you have to tell yourself is you're going to look at him and you're going to think, boy, that guy should be dominating games. And I would just tell you, you need patience. He is a second year player. He's gained some weight. He's been now like 295 ish. And he's very strong. He's 6'5" plus. I mean, I'm telling you, he looks as good as a Minnesota defensive lineman has looked in terms of a defensive tackle since Rashid Hageman. I'm not telling you that he's going to be Rashid Hageman and be a top 60 overall pick. I'm telling you that there is a lot of upside with that young man. I just don't know when you're going to see it start to flourish. Is it going to be this year? I think he'll play 100 plus snaps this year and spell Trill Carter at times. But I am just excited about being able to watch him. Again, he's from Shakopee, was a 4-star out of high school, someone that we really liked, 24/7 Sports, because you see what he is now. And it's like, there's not a lot of guys in that room that look like that. Now, someone who does is Gage Keys, who you put him next to Devin Eastern, they look very similar. Gage Keys has battled some injuries and for parts of 2021, he's healthy now. He's pushing there. You also have Luther McCoy there. So again, we're talking about four names for two spots. And so that's where kind of the overarching theme here about the defensive line, Luke, is you asked me, is Minnesota still going to be able to rotate eight guys? I'm going to say absolutely.
The math checks out, Ryan.
I wouldn't be shocked at all to see in the non-conference them rotating maybe 10 or 11 guys.
Sure.
Because they're going to have to figure out, because of how many guys are so inexperienced. I mean, the only guys that really have any experience in here are Thomas Rush and Trill Carter. So whoever your one technique is in terms of at an FBS Big Ten level, they're going to need to get their feet wet. You have three guys at the strong side end, the five technique that really need to get their feet wet. So they're going to have to figure out the rotation, but I feel confident enough to kind of say, I'm really not as worried as I was 2 weeks ago after being able to watch these guys at practice and kind of just see how their bodies have filled out. I mean, this is what a Big Ten defensive line room should look like in year six of a program.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's transition, talk a little bit about linebacker. This is a position group that you are bringing back some experience. Obviously you lose like a Jack Gibbons. That's a big loss for them. But you know, they bring back, Mariano Sori Marin. They bring back, I think off injury,
Braylon Oliver, Cody Lindenberg.
Cody Lindenberg was what I was thinking, because he didn't play at all last year. Braylon Oliver played, but he didn't quite seem himself, but slowly kind of came back to it. So you hope, you know, you have some experience coming back, some of it off of injury. But all in all, like, I feel pretty good about linebacker, just on paper. I still have some questions about Braylon Oliver. I haven't had a chance to see Cody Lindenberg. But as long as the defensive line can play well, we saw that Mariano Sori Marin can be very effective. He's not perfect, but he can be very effective if he can get clean lanes.
He can. And my big question for this linebacker room is, now without, without Jack Gibbons, without, say, Kamal Martin and Thomas Barber in 19, and without Jack Gibbons in 21, who is going to be the playmaker at linebacker? We've seen flashes from Mariano in doing that. We've seen flashes at times from Braylon Oliver in that 2019 season, but that was 3 years ago. Cody Lindenberg has just been, I don't know what angry injury god has given him some of the most obscure and non soft tissue injuries, but he's finally healthy. You know, Josh Ani's healthy. It's just who's going to step up and actually make the plays, because that's where we saw Jack Gibbons come up so key time and time again last year, was if it was, you know, second down and eight, you saw him run through a lane and make the tackle for loss, and it's second and it's, you know, third and nine instead of third and four or five, or if he misses the tackle. Is that Mariano Sorry-Marin? I don't know. I mean, I'd love for it to be, because he's been out there for so many snaps for so many years. It's just linebacker is one position fall camp that is just so hard to tell, because they're rarely doing anything tackling to the ground. And so you don't know, you know, would he have made that tackle? Would he have missed it? But Mariano's going to transition from Will, where he was last year, to Mike linebacker, middle linebacker here in 2022. And that's where the Will linebacker position, vacated by Sorry-Marin, is going to be between Braylon Oliver and Cody Lindenberg, more or less. And that's where you saw in November last year, the light started to come on pretty consistently for Braylon Oliver. Now, again, we're talking about limited snaps. When he did get in, we're talking 10 to 20 snaps a game in November. But it's at least encouraging that, number one, he has stayed healthy since that horrific knee injury that kept him out for 19 and 20. But that he's got his confidence back. Now, and again, I'd tell you he's flying around to practice because he is, but I don't know what the lack of tackling, what else there really is to say other than that. I mean, I would tell you if there was who I want to get off the bus first from this linebacker group, it's Cody Lindenberg without question. He is the most physically impressive linebacker in that room. And that is said with peace and love to Mariano Sorry-Marin, who is a legitimate 6'3", 240 pounds, with quads that don't belong in dress pants. Like, seeing him at Big Ten Media Days, I don't know how he fit into dress pants.
I've never heard with quads that don't belong in dress pants. I like that. I'm gonna run with that one. That was pretty good.
But Cody is like an inch taller, a little longer, and I would argue he's faster. It's just Cody Lindenberg has to play football. And that's been like, when people ask me what has to happen for Cody Lindenberg to really make an impact, he just needs to stay healthy and he needs to play freaking football, because he starts as a true freshman in his first game ever against Michigan. And then he goes down with a freak injury that sidelines him for all of 20, comes back in 21, is playing early in the non-conference, gets a Liz Frank injury on his foot, and comes back from that. Again, we're talking about, like, this isn't a sprained ankle or a torn knee or some soft tissue thing. Like, these are freak injuries. It's just Cody Lindenberg needs to play football. And then behind Mariano Sorry-Marin, you have Derek LeCaptain, O-Captain, Luke's captain, Mr. I only score touchdowns as a running back. Now I transition back to Mike linebacker behind Sorry-Marin. And at the Sam linebacker position, that Minnesota's a base 4-2-5 defense, more or less. And so that's where Mike and Will are always on the field. If they do go three linebackers, you still have two guys there in Donald Willis and Josh Ani. I think Josh Ani's better in coverage. I think Donald Willis is better when you tell him to pin his ears back and try to go get the ball carrier, or you tell him to go get the the quarterback. So that there, I think there are viable names there. We haven't even touched on guys like Lucas Finnessy or Dev Williams, among others, but it's who can step up and be a playmaker. Is it Sorry-Marin? Is it Oliver? Is it Lindenberg, LeCaptain, Donald Willis, Josh Ani? That's what I want to find out more in the non-conference about this group.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the secondary. This is a group that has some key returners, Tyler Newbin, Justin Wally as well. Those are probably the two headliners, right? Jordan Howden definitely deserves some praise as well. Both he and Newbin made huge strides last year. And then you kind of go, okay, well, you know, you have those. And then they probably have their most success in the transfer market in the defensive backfield, where they're able to bring in two transfers, one from the same school as Gibbons, the other from, I think, Western Kentucky.
One of your favorite Kentucky institutions. Yeah. How dare you go Hilltoppers?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I think a kid from my high school actually went to Western Kentucky or Eastern Kentucky
to play basketball. Where did you go to high school again?
Wilmer.
How does a kid from Wilmer, Minnesota end up at Western Kentucky?
Because he was good at basketball.
I don't know. Oh, okay. So athletics.
Yeah,
got it.
Athletics. Yeah. Okay. So Also, you have Tea Time. He's back. He's flashed at times, particularly in practices. Let's see if
I tell you again, Luke. Terrell Smith is flashing again, and I've been asking some. I was asking members of the media the other day, "What is it? A mirage or is it real?" And that's where I mean. Again, you mentioned the corners, and I would tell you I think that Paul Haynes, the corners coach, has four guys that he really trusts.
Also, isn't he just the nicest guy on earth? Like
Paul Haynes?
Yeah, he was at our goal line club event. And he was like incredibly nice, incredibly well spoken. Understandably, can see why he was a head coach at one point.
Yes, why he was a head coach in the MAC for a few years. And I think PJ played against his Kent State team early in his Minnesota tenure. But I mean, here's how they're running in fall camp: is Justin Wally has been starting at the two practices. Again, everybody knows that was probably going to be the case. I would tell you, it looks like he's added about 5 pounds of muscle. Not telling you this is hashtag best shape of your life.
How do you quantify that, honestly? But how do you quantify that? How do you quantify he added 5 pounds?
I would tell you he looks, his frame is more filled out.
Like, that's a special skill, Ryan.
It looks like he was in a collegiate weight room for the last 8 months.
Okay.
Like his arms are bigger, his legs are more defined. You know, he just looks like he's a little bit more filled out. Again, from the amount of time that I actually have, again, this creepy job of mine. But
I was just going to say, your resume just gets creepier and creepier. Like,
I know.
What are your skills? I can tell if a 18 to 23 year old or 24 year old has added more definition to their arms.
Again, you look at it enough and you have to talk about it enough where you know that you have to make mental notes about it, but that's here nor there. So again, you have Justin Wally on the one side, and the guy that's been starting has been Terrell Smith. And I would tell you, if you were there on Saturday at that practice, you watched Terrell Smith lock up Chris Ottman Bell four straight reps or four reps down the field. Now, we'll get into it next week. Chris Ottman Bell's had a weird camp. It's been, I guess, non-Chris Ottman Bell-like. But Terrell Smith has been really good in fall camp. And that's a little bit of a surprise to me. He missed most of the spring with an injury. He got – I mean, this is where we were at last year, Luke. And this is what I mean is this time last year, we were talking about Terrell Smith in the great spring camp that he had that turned into the fall camp. Terrell Smith was fantastic. And then Miami of Ohio happened, and Mac Hippenhammer, amongst other Miami of Ohio Red Hawk receivers, had made a couple of really good catches on him, and he got beat. And I just think it wasn't next play mentality for that corner. And I think he kind of sunk into a shell, and that's why I didn't really hear from Terrell Smith for the rest of the year. Well, then the spring comes. He doesn't get a lot of reps because he's hurt, and now he has been on fire in fall camp. So what does that mean for September? I have no idea. I'm just telling you that if the light stays on for Terrell Smith, he is 6'1", he is long, he is, when he is playing well, I mean, you would look at that room and say there's nobody that has more potential than Terrell Smith. It's just about, can he do it consistently? Can he do it from game to game, practice to practice, series to series, rep to rep? And when something goes wrong, when he gets beat, is he just going to let it go, or is it going to let him, you know, is it going to stick with him? That's my thing with Terrell Smith, is I don't question anything physically with him. Straight line speed, as I mentioned, height, length, physicality. I think Terrell Smith can do it. It's just, I think, the mental side of it. But then you mentioned the two transfers Minnesota's brought in. They're two guys that have earned a lot of praise from PJ Fleck, Joe Rossi, Paul Haynes, Abilene Christian's Ryan Stapp, and then Western Kentucky's Beanie Bishop. Now, Ryan Stapp, stop me if you've heard this before, Luke. Minnesota brings in an Abilene Christian transfer on defense who continues to make plays in fall camp, not because he's the most athletic guy out there, but because he's got great instincts and he's very smart.
Yeah,
have you heard that story before?
Yeah, I've heard that story. It's about this linebacker that we talked about that they're going to miss next year named Jack Gibbons.
So Ryan Stapp has been everything I thought he was going to be, and I think he's kind of surpassed my expectations some. He continues to make plays and practices. He jumped a Clay Geary route just the other day, picked off Tanner Morgan for an interception, continues to make plays in terms of in the run game. Ryan Stapp, you look at him, I mean, and you look at him next to Terrell Smith, I mean, they look like very different corners. And Ryan Stapp is not a very big guy. He's probably 5'10", 5'11", 180 pounds. But that kid is quick. That kid is instinctual. That kid knows how to play cornerback at a high level. And the interesting part is, Luke, they've been rotating him in outside and inside in the slot. So we've been seeing Flip Dixon, who I don't know if you saw Dan Owen's picture that he tweeted out today.
Yeah, I did. Oh, my heavens.
Flip Dixon looks like Predator.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a terrifying, terrifying thing to see somebody coming downhill who is a linebacker body playing safety, playing nickel, but they have options there. Michael Dixon and Ryan Stapp have been taking a lot of reps at that nickel position. You'll remember in 2019, that was Chris Williamson's spot. Justice Harris was there the last couple of years. Well, now it's going to be Stapp or Dixon. And if Terrell Smith falters a little bit, well, that means it could be Ryan Stapp. You also have Beanie Bishop there, who is also going to factor in. Again, not the biggest guy in the world, probably 5'8", but a guy that continues to make plays. Justin Wally was just talking about him after practice the other day, saying, I know that you didn't see much from him today in terms of making plays, but yesterday that guy had a couple of interceptions. So they have four corners that they trust. I would tell you in the slot, like I said, Ryan Stapp or Michael Dixon, who there is nobody who looks scarier coming off the bus as a secondary member. And I say that with peace and love to the entire Newbin family, because Tyler Newbin is a very well put together safety, but Michael Dixon is going to be I'm very interested to see how Joe Rossi deploys him. What I mean by that is, because Minnesota has a fourth-year starter at safety in Jordan Howden, because they have a third-year starter in Tyler Newbin, Michael Dixon, who is a safety, it's tough to have him see the field, which is why he's transitioned down into the slot. Well, is he going to be just a slot guy? Could you see him as a de facto second linebacker in certain spots? How do they kind of deploy him? Because I can tell you this much, Michael Dixon gets going downhill, it's a lot of fun. So I would tell you just in the immediate, they have four corners that they trust. And that's where I made the statement. I think I made the statement on KFan or on Twitter that I think this has the potential, as we kind of transition to safety, Luke, that, I mean, I think this has the potential, and I kind of already deemed it this way. I think this is going to be the most talented secondary that we've seen in the PJ Fleck tenure. And I remember the year of 2019 with Chris Williamson and Antoine Winfield. I mean, Coney Durr back there, they were good. I just think that this ceiling with this secondary, with the bodies that they have back there, I mean, I think it has a chance to be a lot of fun.
Think about the maturation that they've made, both, you know, from a personnel standpoint, but also some of the guys in the program from 2020 and how bad it was, right? Especially at safety. And it's the same two guys, right? And they're still starting, and they've made that much of an improvement. That's a kudos to this staff. I know that the safeties coach is now at the defensive coordinator at Rutgers. All good for him. But I mean, yeah. I mean, this is a testament to this staff's ability, you know, to what's the word I'm searching for? Help guys grow,
Development staff.
Yeah.
Where again, Jordan Howden in 2018, he was bad. Tyler Newbin in 2020, he was bad. Again, first year starting, didn't get, you know, a ton of time to really figure it out. Well, now you're going to be starting to see, hopefully, them reap the dividends more or less. And that's where, when you look at safety, Howden and Newbin, and again, I think they're probably one of the most underrated safety duos in the Big Ten. I mean, no one's talking about them. I mean, I was at Big Ten Media Days asking, you know, I went out to dinner and drinks with a lot of the beat writers from 24/7 in the West, and nobody knows Jordan Howden's name amongst like non-Minnesota media. Nobody knows Tyler Newbin's name. Nobody knows Michael Dixon's name. And it's just like, are they that under the radar? I mean, I guess, but yeah. It's like, they need to, and that's where one of the big things that I would tell you that Joe Rossi wants to see from this secondary, like if they are going to live up to the praise I'm giving them, mm-hmm. is they have to be a lot better with their ball skills.
Sure.
They left a lot of picks on the field last year. where instead of a pass, you know, it slips through the hands and it's just a pass breakup and it's third down, then, I mean, an interception can go a long way. That's why you saw Iowa win the West last year, is because Iowa had 25 interceptions, which was 9 more than any other Big Ten team last year. Now, if, you know, some of that tip ball luck goes Minnesota's way, or their corners can make more plays on the ball, or their safeties react a little bit more, and you see more of that Antoine Winfield type of playmakers from either Howden or Newbin, and that can help this team tremendously. And so that's where, if there's going to be one thing I would want to see from the secondary, it's can they make more plays? Because mm-hmm. I think they'll be in the spots, but you can be in the spot all you want all the time. You have to make the play. Like, you can't be just around to, you know, break it up necessarily. At some point, you have to have the Iowa gene in you, mm-hmm. where there's a reason Iowa's, you know, top three in turnovers seemingly every year. Their guys are really good at ball skills. They're usually they know how to play the ball. And so that's what I want to see is, can Tyler Newbin, again, who led the team last year in interceptions, can he continue to do that? Can Jordan Howden figure it out a little bit more without a create some takeaways? Same thing goes with Michael Dixon. Mm-hmm. But I would tell you, if there is a spot on defense where I think there is, as for as much depth as they have safeties coming out of the wazoo, they got safeties coming out of their ears. You have Howden and Newbin in their third and fourth year starting. You have Michael Dixon back there. Darius Green in his second year. Jalen Glaze in his third year. And if there's one true freshman who has surprised the absolute crap out of me, it is Coleman Bryson. He has, if there is one true freshman in training camp, regardless of the side of the ball, that has the training wheels off, it's Coleman Bryson. He is getting all the reps he can handle alongside Darius Green or Jalen Glaze at that number two safety spot. Like, he is a ball player. And that's where you ask around about Coleman Bryson. And I asked Tyler Newbin about him at Big Ten Media Days. He was like, that dude, and Newbin just gushed about him in terms of, that guy watches as much film as I do. And to give you some context, Tyler Newbin in the off season was watching 10 plus hours of film a week. And we're talking about a true freshman who hasn't started a game, hasn't played in a game, is in there in the film room grinding with Tyler Newbin. And Tyler Newbin just continues to go on and say, that guy is smart beyond his years. He carries himself in a different way. And he's like, don't be surprised when that guy is making plays. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I thought he was going to make plays, you know, maybe in a 2025.
Sure.
And I'm not telling you he's going to go out and have 50 tackles and 3 picks this fall. Because if Coleman Bryson is playing safety, somebody died in front of him. Like, there are a lot of injuries that would have to happen, but what's to say Coleman Bryson doesn't become a quad teams member? You know, mm-hmm. what the quad teams are, the 4 special teams, punt return, kick return. Why not get him his experience out there? But they are incredibly excited about Coleman Bryson. So again, we're talking, and that's like safety 5. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, I feel good about safety. And it's just about, with this secondary and just with this defense overall, Luke, they want to be able to create more turnovers. That was the recipe for Iowa last year. Was why did they win so many football games with how horrific that offense was? It's because their defense continued to give their offense the ball in such plus field position mm-hmm. that eventually Kirk Ferentz offenses would find a way to find points.
Brian Ferentz.
Oh, you can... Nepotism, baby. Nepotism. But I'm just saying, like, that's kind of the thing that I would say, that if I had to guess what Joe Rossi wanted to see from this defense is, yes, he wants to see it from some of the new bodies on the defensive line, but he wants to find a way to create more turnovers. Again, a Joe Rossi defense stops the run, doesn't give up big plays.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, well, once you get past that, you have to be able to start to force more turnovers than they did last season.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I do want to make sure we touch on before we transition to special teams. Do you remember the conversation that I think we had in one of our breakdown episodes where we were saying, I think it was early, it might have even been after the Bowling Green game. You know, I know you don't like to talk about that, or you don't like when I utter that. But the question was, like, this defense doesn't have anybody that's a playmaker. And then I think as the season went on, or I think that actually where we settled was Tyler Newbern was like the only one out there making plays or whatever. But as the season went on, that was almost the strength of that defense last year. And kind of what I hear again is there isn't anybody that's going to necessarily dominate defensively, but you, as long as you have guys playing their role, this can be
do
almost,
your job.
Yes, exactly.
And then someone will make the play.
Yeah. It's almost more devastating,
you don't have
right?
You don't have your Danielle Hunter or the one man wrecking crew, or even last year, Boye Mafe on passing downs. I don't know that you have that one man wrecking crew pass rusher, but I think you have guys that. Well, here's the hypothetical scenario, Luke. So say they struggle to rush the passer in September, and so you get to the Michigan State game. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the secondary is as good as I potentially think it is, well, they're going to be able to play a lot more man coverage than what we saw last year. Yeah. That also means Joe Rossi can get creative and send five or six guys
blitz.
And try to generate that pressure and trust his defensive backs on the outside. So I just think it comes down to what happens in those first three games against New Mexico State, Western Illinois, Colorado. Who steps up to start making the plays? Because you can do it in practice all you want, but I think we've seen players throughout the years where when the lights come on Thursday night or Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon, you got to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where, to your point, who is going to be that guy? I mean, ask that question at all three levels of the defense. I don't know what the answer to that is right now. I would just tell you, I think that there's bodies capable of doing it, but that's going to be the thing that's going to, I think this will be a good defense, but if they want to be that elite defense, that Wisconsin and Iowa defense, you better be able to figure out a way to force turnovers, because mm-hmm. that's part of what makes Iowa and Wisconsin defenses so good.
Okay, just to wrap up, we do have to talk special teams. This has always been kind of a thorn in the side for you. You often stand on your soapbox and rant endlessly.
Sound so enthralled with me when I do that.
Okay,
I can just tell by the tone of your voice there.
So kicking, not a lot's changed, right? Brady Week's still going to snap.
Crawford's
going to punt.
The statistic is, for the first time in the PJ Fleck tenure at Minnesota, they returned their long snapper, punter,
and kicker.
Kicker,
Trickett.
Holder, and yep. kickoff man.
Oh, yeah. Kesich. Yeah.
Dragan Kesich, who you may have been seeing on social media here recently with some interesting hair.
He's got a good personality on those. I'm not saying he's quite Pete Martell level, but he's got a little humor.
He's up there, I think.
Yeah, he's
got
good.
A great personality.
Yeah, he's got a good personality. Somebody should get him some NIL. Okay, kicking wise, Trickett, we expected a lot given how good he was coming out of the MAC. He struggled maybe a little bit more than you would expect last year. Hopefully, he'll be a little bit more comfortable, be better this year. I think one of the unsung heroes of the special teams has been Brady Weeks. He hasn't had many bad snaps. Kesich was good kicking off for the most part last year. I thought that was a positive. I think the big question mark is Mark Crawford and how good he can be. That is the really interesting thing to watch. Now the 28-year-old, I think he's almost as old as you, Ryan.
I think he's, are we sure he's only 28?
I'm not positive, but
he might be. I think you're right.
I think it's 27, 28, something like that. But this is going to be, is this year three for him now?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is year three. You hope that he makes the improvement. He's flashed at moments. He's just lacked the consistency. That's been his biggest struggle.
It has. And so, again, I don't have a ton to kind of add from what I've seen in fall camp, because I would tell you, I don't think, unless it's
that's not a good barometer
Well, it's just like, unless it's absolutely horrible, which it hasn't been, what am I going to tell you from like the 4 minutes of special teams that I get to see of Matthew Trickett make like getting four field goal attempts at a practice, or Mark Crawford getting one or two punt attempts? I just don't have a ton to add there. I would just tell you that it needs to be better for Matthew Trickett. You have to be able to hit more than 68% of your field goals.
Yes.
Now, my guess would be Matthew Trickett from 47 yards and in, it's going to be him. From 48 and out, I think that they feel pretty comfortable from what I've seen them in the spring and in the fall going to Dragan Kesich. And you saw them try to do that against Iowa. Incredibly interesting two plays there between Mike Sanford calling a swing pass 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage on third down there.
Yeah.
Rubbing my temples if you can't hear that. And then PJ deciding to throw Dragan Kesich out there for his first ever field goal attempt at Kinnick Stadium. That's here nor there. But I would just hope that they break out Dragan in the non-conference at some point. Let him get a couple kicks under his belt before you start throwing him to the Wolves in Big Ten play. Mark Crawford last year, 41 yards per punt. I mean, am I supposed to be like impressed by any of that? I'm not incredibly sure. I mean, I would tell you that like you get 41 yards in a cloud of dust. There was no team that had less punt return yards against them than the Minnesota Golden Gophers last year.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. But like, you know, they were still not even top half of the 14 teams in the Big Ten and net punt. And the Big Ten's really good, they were still bad.
Yeah.
Like Mark Crawford needs to flip the field more.
Yeah.
I mean, just point blank.
Yep.
And then
he flashed at times, but yes, he just lacked consistency in doing that consistently.
Right. And I have no qualms about Dragan Kesich in the kickoff game. I think Minnesota's coverage units have been really good. It just comes down to Luke
returns.
I mean, you know, it's just, you're getting me worked up again because now I have to think about punt and kick return.
So
and I guess the lone thing I can say, Luke, is I'm just very happy in peace and beautiful love to the Brock Anixtead, but I cannot stress to you how excited I am to never watch Brock Anixtead field another punt.
Wow.
I had a media member come up to me at one of the practices. I'm like, boy, they're going to miss that sure-handed Brock Anixtead. And I was like, what games were you watching last year? He goes, you never muffed one. I go, do you not remember? Like,
yeah, he muffed the one at Iowa, wasn't it?
He muffed one at Iowa. He muffed one against Wisconsin that nearly gave Wisconsin the ball deep in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of, actually.
The king of watching the ball sail over his head for fit and just lose 20 yards of field position. It was just like, here's how you know it's bad. As Daniel House was standing next to me. And again, you'll hear all the Daniel House you want next week. The king of analytics himself, the king of stats. I go, how many yards do you think Brock Anix had lost them in field position last year? I go over under like 40. He goes, it's probably the right number. I'm like, what are we even discussing then at this point? And again, that media member and I did not see it either. That's here nor there. So Brock Anixtead's now at Illinois State with his brother, Zach. And the punt returner looks like it's going to be Quentin Redding. And you may be thinking to yourself, Ryan, I've never heard that name in my entire life before. You could just be making that up. And to be honest, that's fair. Well, he is the pride of Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. I can assure you, if you're listening to this, you're probably taller than him. He is 5'6", maybe. Just a little jitterbug with the ball in his hands, but he is incredibly shifty. Someone that has been the lead punt returner since the spring. It's going to be him or potentially Clay Geary, potentially Michael Brown-Stevens, potentially Kristen Hoskins. But I would imagine it's going to be Quentin Redding. Now, kickoff return, I'm just going to throw my arms to the sky, Luke. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I have not seen a live kick return rep since West Virginia. I can tell you that Fleck said afterwards this past week that he would preferably want to use a running back because he feels like they're the best natural fit there. And I know what you're all thinking because I'm thinking it too. For the love of sweet Moses and Mary, if you throw Muhammad Ibrahim or Trey Potts back there, so help me. So help me. But I don't want to see Bryce Williams back there. I mean – maybe Zach Evans. I would just rather you throw back there Kristen Hoskins or Michael Brown-Stevens, Daniel Jackson, something like that. But I don't know what to tell you because I don't know who's going to be returning kickoffs. We really haven't seen much.
I just hope we don't see Chris Ottman-Bell back there again.
I just want somebody that has vision. Now, I don't want to sacrifice Mo Ibrahim or Trayson Potts to the Wolves because I trust their vision. I'll tell you, there's a running back whose vision I don't trust. And I think I've talked about that for years now, but it's like, why not give, you know, Lameki Brockington, Ike White, Kristen Hoskins, Zach Evans, you know, give somebody else a chance. They're Michael Brown Stevens. That I'm so tired of watching, just so sad. Of like, think about the kickoff returners we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cam Wiley.
When's what the last kickoff?
Cam Wiley kickoff return moment? Because yeah. I don't remember one.
When's the last kickoff return touchdown? Was it Jalen Myrick against Northwestern in the Jerry Kill era? I know we had the punt return against Wisconsin, but I think that might be the last kickoff return touchdown.
Yeah, because we've seen two punt return touchdowns because Antoine Winfield had one.
Yep, and so did
Demetrius Douglas
against Wisconsin.
And then the last 2 years have been incredibly, incredibly, incredibly sad. So, folks, don't know what to tell you. One of the highest paid special teams coaches in America. I hope he can figure out something in the return game because, well, I mean, Luke, what if we see them just go punt safe 90% of the time where they just keep the defense on the field and they put a returner back there? Just again,
they've gone kick safe understand. And punt safe for basically the tenure of
well, it's like
Flex.
I get. You know, the kickoff return thing, more or less. Again, yeah. If you just fair catch it, you get it at the 25. To be fair, that's a great thing considering the sad kickoff returns we've seen lose double-digit yards of field position or some random penalty that kickoff return always seems to get. But it's like, how can you not fix that? It's not completely, completely blown up like mm-hmm. Nebraska special teams, but I want to see more out of every single facet outside of the coverage game.
Look, yeah.
Rob Wenger, your coverage units, elite.
I mean,
every other part, I think we got a lot of room to improve, me boy.
I mean, Nebraska and Minnesota's special teams are in the same tier, right? Like, I would probably argue.
I haven't watched enough special teams, but.
Well, that's just the way I feel, but.
I'm not disproving you. I'm just saying Nebraska was just completely inept. Right. I think Minnesota's coverage units at least get them a tier above, but I wouldn't put them any further north above from there.
Okay, so we'll be back next week.
God bless Brady Weeks, by the way.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
We never have to say his name, and that is the biggest compliment you can ever get.
Totally jinxed him, but okay.
I believe in Brady Weeks.
Next week, Daniel House, he'll be back. We'll do some fun stuff with him. It's always good to get his perspective, the guy from Gopher Gurus.
Camp observations, over-unders. We'll do our hypothetical draft stuff.
Yeah, I do have one thing. Did you get your Roseville Community Ed thing in the mail today?
I did. I immediately threw it away and didn't look at it.
You missed it because in there,
in there?
No, but there was a class that you can take about how to listen to a podcast, and I was thinking that you should head over there and just start handing out like QR
Go for
codes.
Gridiron Radio.
Yeah. QR
I think
codes.
We got some extra glasses somewhere, Luke.
Yeah, we got those pint glasses. We should put QR codes in them and you can just teach people because you have that article written. You can just say, here's how you subscribe to my podcast, right?
So, Luke, I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you think the people that are going to how to listen to a podcast class are going to know what a QR code is and how to use it?
No, but you know what? They're going to have to bring their smartphones and you're going to be there. So I think that there's a fighting chance that they'll get it figured out.
Why is that a class?
It's not even close. It's not even that far from your house. It's very close.
I think my favorite part about you telling me this is Roseville has a class that is actually something you can just put into Google and then click on the top result and it'll teach you the same thing. But somebody wants to show up in person.
Yeah, this is the way it's
going to be.
Yeah. And if you want to learn how to listen to a podcast and you already are.
Or if you
want to
become a sponsor, Luke.
Oh, yeah. If you want to become a sponsor, that too. Yeah. So, obviously, Ryan's website sponsored this episode of the podcast, Gopher Illustrated. 99 cents, literally, figuratively, can get you behind the paywall for 1 month. So, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.